Hey, everybody. Welcome to Roger and Me, a.k.a. Roger Ebert and Me, a movie review podcast that also is a tribute to Siskel and Ebert, hosted by myself, Brett Arnold, and longtime film critic Mark Dusick of MarkReviewsMovies.com. We are here to discuss every new theatrical release and every new streaming release each Friday in the format pioneered by Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert. We are a guide to all the new release movies that come out. That's basically all you need to know about us. Last week, Mark, I think was technically our 100th episode. If you count the, like, you know, early ones where I did the two-pronged version of the show, where I did rewatch old Siskel and Ebert with other critics and reevaluate those movies from the 70s or whatever era we were talking about. So if you include those, I think we're at 100. If you include the ones where it's just you and I, we're probably a few away. Just wanted to say we are nearing a milestone. We may have hit a milestone. I'm not paying too much attention to things like that, but I did get a notification. So congrats to us. We also just hit 50,000 downloads as of this morning. So that's a really cool milestone as well. So thank you guys so much for sticking with us. It's been almost 2 years of us reviewing every movie every week. Mark's doing a much better job than me at that goal. He did 9 this week when I only did a mere 5, but it feels like I did 6, Mark, because I had to watch The Dry ahead of The Dry 2, which is out this week. And I also rewatched some Apes movies, so it feels like I watched a lot more than I actually have my actual output here. We're on a time crunch today. I don't want to... you should at least speak. Mark, hello.
Hi.
Perfect.
I'm good. Yeah, that's it.
Intro done. Mark has spoken. There he is. We're going to get right into it. Here is Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. I'm going to go ahead and call it... Is this not just like another reboot of this franchise? We'll talk about that and what it means. But it's a new Planet of the Apes movies that takes place hundreds of years, even maybe 1,000? No, I think it's 300 or so years after the last time we saw these characters. So here is the trailer.
With the concept of evolution. In their time, humans were capable of many great things.
Noah!
They could fly like eagles fly. They could speak across oceans. But now, it is our time, and it is my kingdom. We will learn. Apes will learn. I will learn.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. If there's the main takeaway from this movie, because I am going to be, I don't know if I'm a 2.5 or a 3. I'm just going to say up top on about this movie. I'm very conflicted because it is an incredible technical achievement. It has the most impressive visual effects I've seen in quite some time, arguably ever. There are parts of this movie, there are certain elements. There's that monkey that I don't know what kind of ape or orangutan or whatever it is. It's the orangish one. I would call him the new Maurice. His name is Raka. He's great. The design of this character, the performance of this character, the motion capture, you see the emotion in the eyes. I think that's what makes a big difference with these characters versus like the dead-eyed creations we see elsewhere. The motion capture really helps, but like it is the like Peter Jackson's Weta amazing technology that I've always said is the best and always want to see more of. So in terms of that and scale of like digital heavy blockbusters, this is one of the best looking ones I've ever seen. And I think it's an amazing achievement in terms of the apes themselves feeling like real characters, despite being entirely CGI creations, which was always the thing with these new Apes movies since 2011. That was like why we were all blown away by them. The CGI was unexpectedly good. We all cared about Caesar. We cared about these characters and the spectacle of it all, like really hit hard. I actually think that it's a genius idea, the rise of the Planet of the Apes, because like usually you hear like prequel to a franchise, you're like, who cares? I don't need to know why things happen. But knowing Caesar's arc and setting it up that way so that you as an audience member are invested with the ape side of things is like a genius little trick. I think those three movies are really cool, even if I cooled a little bit on the last one. So this one, I don't really know why it didn't hit the same. It doesn't have the same emotional connection that you have to Caesar with these new characters they're introducing. I think they're fine characters, and I had a good enough time with them. I think my big problem is, Mark, this is a 2.5-hour movie that definitely feels like a 2.5-hour movie, and it never really had an identity of its own to me. It just feels like it's doing another reboot, and it feels like by the end, Mark, it's moving backwards and not forwards. And I was so excited that it was 300 or so years in the future because it's like the ape story now, but it still gets so hamstrung on telling a human narrative that I just personally don't think that's not the story I would have told, I guess. But maybe that's part of, you're going to tell me it's part of the franchise history and the humans are always involved and they need to be a part of it. But I don't know. This felt like it should have been the ape story, and it was kind of, I didn't know whose story it was. The antagonists feel like kind of second rate here too. I don't know. Something's off about this one, despite looking great.
I think the despite looking great thing, I think you're understating that. It looks amazing.
It's amazing.
It looks amazing. I cannot not recommend this thing just because it is the past three movies were like benchmarks. Each one was a benchmark for visual effects and what they could do with motion capture performance and making these apes look real. And this is another one. And I can't not recommend it, despite my qualms with the story too, just because it is worth seeing to see where we're at in terms of the visual effects and what they can do and making these characters look real, have actual emotion and intelligence behind computer generated eyes, which I find astonishing that they're able to do that with those,
and like
with
the
these
movement
actors
too.
Yeah,
the movement of Raka. I was trying to say, I think I got sidetracked by my own whatever. But like,
who is an orangutan?
He's an orangutan, and the way he moves, it's just like there's weight behind it. I can't even describe. I guess that's the best way to describe it.
That's
but like
that is
you
the best
feel
way.
It doesn't look fake. It looks real and it's convincing. And this movie continues the series tradition of using real locations, which is something that sounds like a basic function of a movie, but nowadays does not happen. Marvel movies shoot with a green screen. They call the volume. It's all fake backgrounds. So the CGI things within a CGI background looks like garbage, and we know that now. So this movie is CGI elements in real New Zealand woods or whatever, and it looks awesome. It looks great. So like, I agree. I recommend it purely as like a go see it in theaters spectacle thing, despite the fact that like, it's an hour too long for me. Like, it just, I don't know what this movie, like the story just feels like, a prequel to something that is, they're building up to something and it doesn't really pay off here. Yeah.
But don't forget that Rise of the Planet of the Apes also was a prequel to the movies that was building up towards a trilogy. And at the time it didn't quite seem that way. Maybe they knew that if it was successful, there was going to be a sequel, but nobody knew if Rise of the Planet of the Apes was going to be successful. And then when it was, you could be like, yeah, we know where this is going to go now because it's telling Caesar's story and it's continuing it on. Here, I think it is setting up something. I don't want to say what. I don't think the human element, I get where you're coming from the human element, just because of where it's going by the end. But I don't, that is right at the end. It's right at the end.
It's more, my problem is, I'm interested in the human story of it all. I guess my problem is more with like, generic little girl human character that I feel like I've seen in the more recent examples, like 65, but there's a million examples of like guy finds girl. I mean, I guess this is like an ape centric version of that, but it felt like an archetypal thing, that girl. And I didn't love that arc, but man, I love the ideas in this movie so much that like, that's why I'm confused by why I don't like it as much as like the other ones. Because the ideas of the bad guys, which are apes that are trying to do a speed run on evolution of human evolution and like get all their technology and like read all, like learn how to read and write and fly planes, like get all that knowledge in this vault or something, that like where humankind had stored all that kind of thing. And like, that's what the plot is. And that's an awesome plot. And then there's also the, like the main characters, Noah and his family and their connection to nature and other birds and stuff. And like, it's about, the movie has these big ideas about, I guess, like what, cultural assimilation and how people like lose parts of their culture and stuff. It like has these big ideas that like, honestly, it doesn't really engage with very much. Like, it presents them and then it kind of moves on to other blockbustery stuff. But like, I was interested in that stuff and it just doesn't engage with it enough. And I loved the bad guy stuff, and I didn't think it was set up well enough. It just felt like something about it was so much more typical, and I rewatched those other ones, man, and I was still so emotionally invested in those, and it's hard not to be. And this one, like, I didn't dislike them, the characters or anything, but like, it didn't hit the same way. It just doesn't have the same impact. But please.
Yeah, there's no moment. Yeah. There's no moment in this one.
Yes.
To start off with these characters.
Yeah.
There's none of that. But I was caught up in the characters. What I really appreciate about the visual effects and them being this good is that at a certain point, I just stopped paying attention to how meticulous the detail is in them. And I just accepted them as characters and let that story unfold. And I did come to like Noah and Araka, and I found the villain Proxima Caesar, who is kind of taking on the mantle of Caesar, even though nothing
Kevin,
at all like Caesar.
Kevin Durand, who we just saw in Abigail, he's so good in this as Proxima Caesar. Yeah.
But, you know, I was just caught up in that. You're right, though, that there are ideas here, like the concept of Caesar as an almost messianic figure, like a religious figure. There's Raka is part of a sect, like a religious sect that is going from Caesar's teachings and following them along. And then the new Caesar has taken them and twisted them to control other apes. Those are really good ideas.
Religious fanaticism,
bastardizing
what the actual text is. It's all very compelling ideas.
Yes.
But what were you? Yeah.
But you were gonna, maybe wherever it's trying to go by introducing the human character played by Freya Allen, who I think we saw in the Irish horror movie? There was something we saw her in recently.
Mm. I don't remember.
I mean, that character isn't compelling because she's clearly there for the later.
Oh, she was in Baghead. Okay.
That's right. She was in Baghead. I couldn't remember.
She's also on
that one.
Netflix's Witcher show, which I don't watch, but that's where she's from.
Yeah. Me neither. I haven't watched that yet. But I maybe it needed a bit more heft of those ideas of society and religion, and maybe could have done without the human character getting there to start setting up wherever it's going to go. But I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt that the story and these characters are eventually going to go somewhere, because I was hesitant about, you know, where Rise of the Planet of the Apes might go. It's a little sentimental. Yeah, I do think Caesar and Andy Serkis are great characters in that movie. And he gets even better as they go on. So I have some trust in this. If they can get the visual effects right, which they do.
They do, yeah.
If they can get that right, it's worthwhile. And I trust that there's some idea here, and I think it plants all of those seeds for whatever could come next, that I'm still interested in where this could go.
Yeah, me too.
It's crazy. This is a series that started in the late 60s.
Yeah.
They're still making movies about them that are still compelling and still interesting and still have things to say and are pushing the limits. You know, the old ones were pushing the limits of makeup. These are pushing the limits of, you know, visual effects and digital effects and what they can do. And it's still worthwhile. It's impressive.
The Caesar's legacy stuff reminded me of like Dune 2 and like Lisan al Gaib narrative and how like that kind of stuff. And like there's the Kevin Durant thing where he's like, what a wonderful day. And that is so Mad Max Fury Road-y, like straight up, that like some of these things, like parts of this movie, I think it's another thing I didn't like. I love, you know, homages can be cool, but like it just felt like it was taking different parts of recent post-apocalyptic things, like just typical dystopia post-apocalyptic stuff that I've seen already, and kind of repurposing it with apes. So like something about it was a little off for me, but I agree with almost everything you're saying. Pretty much everything you're saying, that like I'm interested in where it goes from here. I think it truly puts every other movie of the scale to shame in terms of digital effects. And it, like, I know Weta is only one place, but like they should expand or like teach their technology to other people, because it just needs to be used. Because like this movie doesn't cost more than a Marvel movie. That's what's crazy. It probably costs less than like a shitty looking Quantumania, based on like the labor that goes involved and how quick they put them together and shit like that. Like if you spend the time and do it correctly, like this is what it looks like. And it just, you know, I'm hopeful that audiences will accept things like this and go see this and reward it with money and stop. And, you know, it's already happening with the less, you know, Marvel things bombing. And I hope that continues. But, you know, another thing that's set up here we haven't talked about, an entire spinoff, Planet of the Zebras, which I thought was really cool. Really looking forward to that. I'm gonna go ahead and give it 3 stars, 3-star pass. But it is a 3-star pass, and there I was largely bored for a good like large portions of this movie. Like
I never was bored, because even when I thought there were lulls in the story, I was still.
I guess I checked out in like the I checked out in the middle mostly kind of thing, and I was back in. But like, yeah, it just the human girl stuff definitely was a knock on it. But I see where they're going, and I hope that the next one is interesting. But again, it feels like. I guess that's like what has to happen, but it goes through such great pains to be like humans have regressed in society in the 300 years and are like barely exist. And if at all, and if they do, they don't talk and they don't like, they're like Neanderthal like, and then the movie just kind of throws that away to be like, oh, except this one. And also there's hope for the rest of them. Like, it just seems like it's talking out of both sides of its mouth, that kind of thing, in trying to set up more, but hey, it looks so fucking good. I'm giving it a pass, and that's fine. Let's
3 stars for me too. I think I liked it a little bit more than you did, obviously, but it's definitely worth seeing.
Yes. As we know, the 3-star rating holds much space. There's a lot of room, wiggle
it
room.
It contains there. Multitudes, as I like to say.
It does. All right. Let's talk about what's the title? The Last Stop in Yuma County.
Hear about what's going on in the gas station?
What's that?
Sorry, but our gas pump is dry. I'm waiting on a fuel truck to show up.
Estimated $700,000. A witness spotted a green Pinto with a damaged rear end fleeing the bank at approximately 6:20 a.m. this morning.
Did you hear about the bank robbery this morning?
How are they doing over there?
It's the car.
That trailer sets it up very nicely if you're watching on YouTube, but if you're listening, Mark will do that duty right here. What is this movie
we about? Cannot. This is one of those you cannot give away too much. It is set in the early 70s, I believe, at this road stop along a county road in the middle of Arizona. An unnamed knife salesman shows up looking for gasoline. There's no gasoline in the gas station, so he goes to the diner, he sits down, starts chatting to the waitress, the server there, and then two people come in and they have robbed a bank. And then the two patrons start to realize, like, oh, wait, there's something going on with these two guys. And that's when the two robbers decide they're going to hold the two of them hostage. That's all the setup I think I want to give. And from there, it is, I'm so impressed by this film. It is such a fantastic slow burn, and it builds up. I'm not going to say anything specific. I'm just going to say it leads to a moment of violence that was so shocking. I threw my hands up in the air, and I
definitely thought they were going to undo that, and they didn't. Yeah.
I was, my jaw was agape. I was just in shock. I'm like, what just happened? How is this movie going to continue? And it does, and it becomes even better. I thought it was going to be upended as soon as all of that happened. It's not. It keeps going. The way that this thing is structured, and it sets up payoffs that you don't see coming, that you don't know what's going to happen. And it has these fantastic performances just from everybody. Jim Cummings, everybody's lovable indie darling of anxiety ridden angst. He's so great. He has such a
he does the classic Jim Cummins role again here. Yes.
Yeah. And he feels a little underused at first until you realize, oh, this is why he's in this movie later. Right. I know we both really like Jocelyn Donahue from her indie horror work. She's great here as the waitress. Richard Brake and Nicholas Logan are the two thieves. Yeah. And then there are other characters. I don't want to explain how they get in here and what role they play, but they do get in here eventually, and you just realize like them figuring out things and what they have on them, on their persons eventually.
Yes. I like that guy's who's constantly referencing movies too, like that are relevant to the movie, kind of like he references Badlands and talks about the jewelry heist from above or whatever. I enjoyed that element too. Like, I was like worried about them adding another element, like more characters coming in, but their arc and was also enjoyable. It's a very fun genre exercise that feels like it's wearing its influences on its sleeve from everything from, you know, like it's like from old westerns to like Coen Brothers-y to Tarantino-y. It's doing all that stuff. And I think you liked it a little more than I did, but I had a great time with it. Yeah, like I had a great time with it. There's funny jokes about, I guess I don't want to say the joke because it kind of gives away everything, but there's funny jokes in it. There's the arc of the Jim Cummings character is surprising and fun to watch, and I appreciated how dark it goes, I guess. This guy, the writer director, I believe it's a debut, right? Francis Galluppi, he just got he's directing an Evil Dead movie off the strength of this. He was just hired, plucked by Sam Raimi to do the new Evil Dead. So I think you'll be very excited to hear that.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I could see that working very well. Anything else you want to say about it? You set it up very nicely. I think it's one of those movies you just want to watch unfold.
Yeah,
it's a 90-minute movie, by the way.
Yeah, it's short. It just comes in. It does everything it needs to do. It does it so well. That's the thing, is that just in terms of the screenplay and how everything is structured and how things are revealed and the way that Galluppi uses the camera to reveal things at particular moments. Like, it's stuff that you could have cheated early on, but by doing it exactly at that moment, by using the camera to show us this is something that a character is realizing. Like,
yes.
What happened to the phone line and who's realizing what's gone on with the phone line and who's that.
Did we say somebody,
it's yeah.
I was going to say, did we say the actual setup of it? Like, they're all,
it's
there.
A hostage. Yeah. It's a hostage situation.
I just like the reason why they're there. I think it's so clever that like they're all at this diner because they're just, it's a middle of nowhere gas station where the fuel truck hasn't showed up yet. So like these people stop for gas and clearly like they need it. And the next gas station is out for 100 miles. So it's just a great setup of like, these people are fully stuck and they can't leave. And you may have mentioned that offhand, but like, I don't remember.
I just mentioned that he needed gas and didn't get out. But
yeah. And I just love the specificity of that because it's so plausible. And it feels like maybe there is an old movie from the 50s that has the same exact setup and it's a Western and it's the same thing. But like, if there isn't, this feels like it could have been one of those. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like it is a movie that could have been ripped from a million years ago, but it also is modern and with all those influences that I talked about. So yeah, I had a really good time. It's a very solid 3-star recommend if you're into, you know, comic, neo-noir, crime, thriller, comedies, whatever you want to say it is. It's a really good time. I'm 3 stars on it.
Yeah, I'm very much into what this film does and how it does it. I'm giving it 3.5.
I love that. I love that. That's really fun. I don't think that energy will maintain itself into this next film. This is Pool Man from writer, director, star Chris Pine. Here's the trailer.
Hey there, Los Angeles. You've reached Awesome Aquatic. Have an awesome aquatical day.
Jack, what am I tasting here?
This is my take on the Langer's egg cream. A little bit of cinnamon.
Ah, it's brilliant.
Dear, should we get married?
Yeah, I mean, we could.
Mr. Berriman, welcome back. What is it today?
I have just finished a study of how we can make the bus schedule great.
Reggie.
Mr. Berriman.
When did you know that you hated this movie? For me, I'll tell you, I think it was when he popped in the VHS of Chinatown and I just threw my hands up in the air and I was like, you already told us you were doing that, and now he has to tell us a second time that he's doing that. It just is like lacks.
Has to make
confidence.
Sure we know. We have to know. Yeah. Make sure we know he's doing Chinatown.
He's like, do you get that I'm doing Chinatown as a stoner noir, a la Lebowski, Inherent Vice, Under the Silver Lake, whatever the fuck example you want to use? It is a bad movie. I'll let Mark take it away. He stayed up late.
Do I have to? Yeah.
Yes. You put in the work.
Put in the work. I hated this thing. It's such a mess. That's such a commonplace thing to say. It's a mess, but man, it is a mess. It doesn't know what it's doing. I was sitting there about it a little bit more than an hour in. I realized there's less than half an hour of this movie left without the credits, you know, and I have no idea what's going on here. I don't understand any of it. I get the basics of it.
And like, but, isn't, I know people would say maybe, well, isn't that the point of a movie like this? Like Inherent Vice, the whole thing is like, you don't get it because it doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? Like the whole thing is like not as complicated as it seems, or it is so overly complicated. It's just like, that's like the joke of it. Ha ha ha. But this one doesn't convey it even that well. So it just is a jumbled mess of nothing. Right.
Yeah, it's like trying to do a Hangout movie for the most part, where I forgot that trailer helped a bit because I forgot how much they talk about food in this thing. There's talk about chicken and egg creams, and I think there's some other stuff like, oh, pastrami. We're going to have a pastrami party and watch Chinatown. They're just hanging out doing nothing, and it's such a great cast. It's Chris Pine, it's Annette Bening, it's Danny DeVito. They bring in Ray Wise and Clancy Brown. Great character actors. They bring them in for nothing. But Jennifer Jason Leigh is the girlfriend. There's so many like great people in this movie. And you know, Pine has a lot of charm. He's a really good actor and he's a great presence on screen. I don't know what he's doing in terms of the screenplay and behind the camera. I don't know if this is some kind of inside joke with him and his co-writer. And this was supposed to be what Los Angeles is like. It's just a bunch of lonely people who have big dreams and can never fulfill them and just sitting around doing nothing.
It's trying to be acerbic, I guess, about LA, just classic LA, platitudes, stereotypes, whatever you want to say. Like, yeah. It's not incisive though about any of it.
No, it's not incisive or insightful about it. They're just hanging out doing nothing.
Oh, I forgot the Aaron Brockovich thing. That he's constantly writing notes to Aaron Brockovich. He's going to city council meeting every day and trying to like change his local stuff. There's like, and like, that sounds fun on paper. I can almost see why he thinks that would work, but the movie just doesn't go anywhere, I guess, is the problem, right? And there's no laughs. I didn't laugh a single time, I don't think.
No, me neither. It's not funny. There's no, because that's what it is. There are no jokes set up and no jokes paid off. It is really just the characters hanging out, and I kind of get it. He's adrift. He doesn't know what he wants to do. And so he's, you know, trying to be an activist. He's trying to be a documentary filmmaker. And then when, you know, the assistant of the city council person comes up and says, hey, can you be a detective? He's like, yeah, I'll be a detective because it's something to do. I just like, but okay, but who is this guy? I don't know who he is. I don't understand a thing about him. Even though the movie tries to get inside his psyche with those dream sequences, and he's doing therapy sessions with Bening's character, and by the end, he actually has a monologue where he's like, I just needed a family. Like, okay, cool, but you never set any of that up. You never set anything up about this guy, except I think now I'm realizing the significance of this like stuffed animal that he held on to and he still has. I think it has to do with family that he never had. But none of that's in the movie. It's never, it's not in the text of the movie, either visually or in the dialogue. It's just, it's just a mess.
Yeah, it's a mess. I have no idea what else to say. I didn't enjoy watching it. I thought it was bad. I think there are a lot of talented people in it, including Chris Pine. As an actor, generally speaking, I don't know. I just can't speak to his writer directorness because if this is my only, if it's, I mean, it's just, all we have to go on is Pool
this
Man.
Is it. This is
bad.
It.
He's bad at it, I guess. But I'm not like I'd watch him give it another go, but he's in the press right now saying like, this movie got panned by critics so much. And you know, I took some time or stock or whatever. And he's just like, I rewatched it and stuff. And I still love it so much. And like, he had a good time. Good for him. Yeah. Yeah. Good for him.
He knows exactly what it's about. He forgot to tell everybody else though.
Good point. It's the one star movie. Sadly. I agree with you. I know you're going to say the same thing, aren't you?
Yeah. One star. Yeah.
One star. Yikes. All right, let's keep things rolling
one
with
one lonely star for one lonely pool man.
I'm the pool man. Soundgarden's pool man. Great
song. I was so happy to see you put that in Letterboxd because I had this. Like, how can we? I mean, how can we do a spoof of Spoon Man to this?
Yeah, I mean, hey, half of my other podcast is me riffing stupid songs out of names, so it just comes naturally. I'm sure I could whip one up for Force of Nature, the Dry too, but my improv skills are weak at this point. I don't have one right now. Force of Nature, the Dry 2. Eric Band is in it. Very Australian. Here's the trailer.
My name's Detective Falk. We're assisting with the search.
Five women got lost out there. Only four came back.
They followed a valley north. It was the last place they saw Alice.
Which means that she's now been on her own for more than 30 hours.
It's a bit remote for a corporate retreat, isn't it? But it's also convenient if you want to make someone disappear.
The Dry 2. I joked earlier in my letterbox that it should be called, I feel like I joked before I knew there was a Dry 2, that if they did a sequel, it would have to be called The Wet. And then this one actually would have worked, I think, if they were to have called it The Wet. But instead, they called it Force of Nature. They could have called it The Dry 2 Women Talking, because there's a lot of that. But it's also not just them saying women talking it, but it's, the plot is also kind of similar to Women Talking in terms of, like, they have to try to figure out what to do in a situation. No, people don't agree. Anyway. What was The Dry and what is The Dry 2? Or do you want me to take this one?
Oh, no, I can do it. The Dry was from, I think it was 2020, I believe. Yes. It was pandemic times, and it became like this little, you know, word of mouth indie hit, which was surprising at that time for anything to become somewhat of a hit. But it was a good movie. It had Eric Bana as a really interesting detective with a mystery that was really dark and layered and was about him digging up things from his past and going to this town where a bunch of people were brutally murdered over the course of the, I think you're more familiar with it because you did just watch it, but I only saw it when it first came out, but I really liked it.
Yeah, it's a classic. My description of these would be like, these feel like airport paperback movies.
Yep.
With like a stock detective, like an Alex Cross that you follow through, or a Jack Reacher, and you just I'm sure there's a bunch of books, and this is just like another case. And it's like totally sturdy and fine as a procedural in that way, but there's something about the such a adherence to its structure that it does again the second time. Again, I watched them back to back, so it was very striking to watch these movies, which have the same flashbacks are very important structure to it. And not only are flashbacks very important to it, but trust me, there will be a personal connection made to the detective about this case. And like that element of it felt a little forced, and it just, at a certain point, it just starts to feel like, yeah, I know where this is going. And it's just, I don't know, it's totally baseline competent and compelling enough, and I'm ultimately going to do the same 3-star pass thing that I've been doing a lot today, I guess. But like, I don't know, do you not agree that it's a little clunky in its just adherence to its, like, well, this is how these movies are made. It's about this guy. He's investigating a case. There will flashback to it, and then there will be flashbacks that connect to his personal backstory that relate to it, and then it's over. Like, it's just a little too neat. Do you understand what I'm saying there?
I mean, maybe, but I think that it's structured really well. I think it's intercut really well. I think the way that those flashbacks unfold so that you are caught
up in
the investigation, and then learning from like an objective point of view what actually happened in the woods. It's about a missing woman in a national park in Australia, so it's like this expanse of woods that nobody knows where anything is, and it's so easy to get lost in there. So there's a search and rescue operation. They're trying to figure out if something bad happened because the woman was a whistleblower for this financial crime that was going on in this company. Anyway, that's the backstory for it. But I really like the way that it's intercut, and learning a bit more about Aaron Falk, Bana's character, and his childhood, because we already know from the first one, he has a bad childhood, and now he has a really bad childhood.
Yeah, that's my issue, I guess, is like it's cliche shit, but it's just like the piling on of things, not just the piling on of different trauma things, but the piling on of very specific connected to this case trauma, like the fact that like it so easily parallels the case. It's just like narrative convenience stuff that, like, in a movie that was engaging me a little more, I probably wouldn't call out. I don't know, but like, you know, you know what I mean by that. I'm sure
I do know. Yeah, I do know exactly what you mean. I don't think they developed the flashbacks with him as a kid as well as the other stuff, but I don't really care, because it did give me a better idea of who this guy is, because I like this character. I think he's a bit more than a stock detective. He has this level of compassion, and he has this sort of, he's this growing skepticism with his job and with the idea of, you know, being able to solve a crime and what that means and who it actually helps, and, you know, how much hurt his job could be doing to people and whether that's worth it, because he's pushing this woman to become a whistleblower by, you know, leveraging her family against her and saying, you're going to go to prison if you don't help us, that kind of stuff. And he's like, was any of this worth it? that this woman disappeared is missing. She might have been killed because of the fact that she became a whistleblower. They don't know.
Yeah.
I like this character. And so I like seeing him go through all this stuff and learning more about him. As far as I know, there's only three books in this series. Oh, okay. And I'm assuming they'll make the third one. And I'm still curious what they'll do with it. And I hope the author is Jane Harper. Write some more, because I think these things are really solid so far.
It feels like it could be Australia's, you know, like a Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series trilogy.
Yeah.
The Stig Larsson's in Sweden? Is that what that is? Yeah, it, you know, I guess like that stockness works in it. I guess you're right that like it is stock in the ways that I'm talking about, but it does those elements very, it does them well, to the point where I liked both movies. Like I would recommend both. Like I would recommend both, but like there's I hate to say there's a little bit of a dryness to them, but it is a fine criticism, I think, to say. But they're totally fine. Like I think they're actually, I said the airport novel thing, which they, I guess they are, but like perfect plane watches too. This would be a great movie to watch on a plane, I think. Which seems like I'm damning it with faint praise, but this is another 3-star movie that I recommend. They're both cool. Cool little detective movies with compelling enough mysteries that are foreshadowed in flashbacks that connect to the character's life. That'll justify.
Yeah. 3 stars for me too. It's a good little mystery with some good characters. And you know, Banna's just really good. I think he found his calling with this character. He's just so good at it. Good playing this character.
I think he found his calling in 2003 with the Hulk. He should have been the Hulk this whole time.
He would have been a good Bruce Banner through this entire thing. You're right.
When's the last time you watched the Ang Lee Hulk? It's really good.
It's been a while. I might like it more now.
Yeah, I got it on 4K or something recently and watched it again, and I was like, this kind of rocks. Like most comic movies are not better than this. Anyway. Let's move on to the last movie of the week. A narrative documentary hybrid of sorts called Gasoline Rainbow. Here's the trailer.
And like, when did this bird go our way? Ever. Things won't ever go our way. Ever. And like, when people see us, they're like, oh man, they start talking and then like start calling the cops. And I feel like when we're in this car, we get to like be ourselves and we don't have to stay in one place.
Where's the moon?
Right there.
Over there.
Oh, it's over there.
Yep, that's what watching this movie feels like. A bunch of disconnected nonsense. I'm interested to hear Mark make a case for it, because I found it very tedious and like a cool idea on paper to like, it seems like it's a, like the documentary element is that these are real people that aren't really actors and they're playing ostensibly themselves. They have their same names, but they are characters. Like they live in a made up place and they're like, they go to a made up school but the director's like, from reading about it a little bit, they like put them in scenarios. They'd be like, okay, we're gonna shoot here, and the general idea of what's happening is here, and go ahead. And then they would go improvise and just talk and figure out stuff. And I think it's trying to be like an authentic look at what it's like to be in this young transitional phase of life, I guess, where you're like about to be an adult but you're clinging on to your youth and you don't want to go do adult stuff. And it's just like this transitional phase of not knowing what your life's going to be. And I think it's trying to be this authentic examination of that. But by virtue of the way it's made, I found it to be like, it called attention to the fakeness of it. Like, I didn't find the conversations that they had to feel real. They felt like I was watching selected pieces of conversations that make the point of what the directors wanted in the movie. So like, I never really connected with it, but I'm open to the idea that it would work for some people, because clearly it does. So please tell
me. Yeah, it worked for me. It worked for me, but I mean, isn't that how you described it? It's just pieces of conversations that the filmmakers want to have to make the point they're trying to make. That's documentary filmmaking, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But at the same time...
That's what the Ross... Sorry. Ross brothers have done.
Yes, and I did like the other one, Bloody Nose, Empty Pockets, which is the only
Bloody
other one
Nose, Empty Pockets is Fantastic. I love that film. That was my best film of 2020. I love that one.
I really liked it too. And that movie is another one where it's like ostensibly a documentary because it's real people, but it is staged in a way that is compelling and makes it like the questionable of like, is this a narrative feature or is this not a narrative feature? And this movie has similar traits to that. And that's what they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, some work more than others, clearly, because I liked one and didn't like another. But please continue.
Yeah, I like this one because I do think it is. I do think it feels authentic by the end because you have these five teens who are, you know, done with high school and they don't know what they're going to do with their life. They just know they got to work and they're going to probably be stuck in this little town in Oregon. Yeah. For the rest of their lives. And they don't, you know, they're like, well, let's go on one last adventure. I just liked following them and seeing like what they're going to get into and the conversations they have and all the people they meet who are so interesting and going on like. Just the train ride is so frightening, even though I imagine a lot of that is faked. But I mean, it's still terrifying when they hop on this train and there's big open gaps so that people don't train hop and do all this stuff. I don't know. It's a hard movie to describe because it really is just following a bunch of teens and listening to them talk and meeting people and trying to figure out what they're even going to do on this adventure. And I just liked it. It's hard to describe. I know I wrote like an entire full review of this, but it's such a easy film to kind of forget like the particulars of it and why it works. But I think it works partly because it does pull off the documentary stuff for the most part, making it seem like it's an actual documentary, even though there's tells that it's not. But
right.
I just think in terms of the formal levels of it and in terms of the characters, it feels real enough that I was caught up and I was questioning and wondering how much of these characters, these actors, are actually the people who are playing them,
right?
And, you know, is this how much do these kids even know each other by the end? When they're
I thought no, yeah,
I did. I thought no too. I thought they just bonded over this because there's like,
yeah,
this moment right at the end where they just are doing something that a group of friends probably wouldn't do in that situation. But it feels like they went on this journey. Then we watched it. We really did watch it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We really did watch these people, these kids become friends or be closer as friends. And I don't know. I think there's merit to that, even if it feels aimless and you don't know where it's going to go. I think there's merit to just feeling like you actually witnessed a real experience, even if it wasn't real. Just that level of, you know, commitment to fake it. I don't know. I was impressed by it.
I love that. I didn't care for it.
I know.
Yeah, I have nothing to really say about it, though. It felt like to me it was doing like Larry Clark stuff without the transgressiveness of kids or anything like that. It doesn't really seem to be like a provocative thing. It's not trying to do that, but it did still remind me of Larry Clark in terms of just trying to be an accurate depiction of what kids are up to, even though if this one was a little nicer, but like by way of Andrea Arnold or something. But I just didn't think it kind of compared to both. But that's maybe unfair because it's clearly just doing its own thing and these guys are clearly doing their own thing. But either you're going to vibe with this or you're not. And either you're going to vibe with the, you know, Gen Z dead ass language that they use, the slang that you probably, if you're a little bit older than us, you probably will have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah.
you catch on. You were like dead ass. Yes. It means it's a catch all. You can use it for everything. Yeah, it's a 2-star movie for me, but I'm not going to discourage anyone from seeking and finding meaning in it because maybe there's obviously some stuff in there that that some people will connect with.
3 stars for me. I liked it. I think it works. What it's trying to do, it's definitely not as good as Bloody Nose, Empty Pockets, which I'm leaning towards masterpiece terrain with that one. I love.
Yeah,
that
it's
one
a really,
much.
It's a really great movie. Check that one out. I don't know where it's streaming, but I'm sure it's streaming somewhere. And that was Roger and Me for the week of Friday, May 10th. We'll be back next week. Oh, actually,
will we?
Yes, I have to mention I will be out of town and I did a pretty bad job of getting ahead for the week. And it's not my fault. I tried. I was blocked from several Stranger screenings until the one that's the week before and now I can't make it. I skipped several Amy Winehouse screenings because I've heard it's bad and it's hard to leave the house these days for something that I don't care about. So that one I'll have to catch up with. The John Krasinski, I don't know if it's screening. I haven't been invited. The Garfield movie, I'm skipping.
Oh, that doesn't come out next week. Okay. So,
well, yeah. So, like, and hopefully I can see Babes. Anyway, I'm out of town and I'll have to do catch up. I will be back it could only be a day or two late. Maybe we'll just have it coming out on Monday instead of Friday.
Yeah, that could work for me. So,
yeah, I could give myself the weekend to catch up. And then by Monday, so next week will be, instead of Friday, it'll come out on Monday. That's going to be what happens. And I'll catch up with all those movies over the weekend, I guess, is my plan. Cool. Thanks for listening. Rate us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and keep the reviews coming in. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
The show starts in one.
Shut up. Ush.